under a rubble of her home. She cries out for her parents, but the voices are gone. She cannot understand. She's confused. She's alone. There is blood on her hands, but it's not her fault. Not her fight, not her war. She's too young to give up, but it's not her fault.
Welcome to Remember Palestine with me, Roshan Mohammed Saleh. On October the 20th, the Israeli Navy forcibly stopped a boat full of pro-Palestinian activists who were attempting to break the Israeli economic siege of Gaza, a siege enforced since 2007, which has led to a human catastrophe in the Palestinian territory. The Estelle was boarded in international waters, according to activists, and its 30 passengers of different nationalities were taken by force to the Israeli port of Ashdod and then deported a few days later. Today on Remember Palestine, we'll speak to a crew member of the Estelle, as well as two veteran Gaza siege breakers. And we'll ask the question, is the devastating siege of Gaza anywhere near ending? But first, this report from Ashraf Shannon in Gaza.
Once again, Israeli forces have acted contrary to international law by boarding the Estelle, a Finnish flagship in international waters, and tasering the activists aboard. In a bid to challenge the Israeli blockade, Estelle was carrying urgently needed medicines, toys and cement. Cancer patient Mohammed Bada was pinning his hopes on the Estelle ship arriving. He was to receive various medications to aid his treatment. He had this to say.
I was really saddened to know that the ship carrying aid and medicines for Gaza was hijacked. I have cancer and I still need cancer medicines, which are very hard to find in Gaza. Cancer patients try to seek treatment abroad due to the shortage in cancer medicines. If medicines were available here, patients wouldn't suffer as much as they do. It was really shocking for me to know that a ship carrying aid was not allowed to reach us.
The Israeli assault on the Estelle drew heavy condemnation by civil society organizations, as well as by the world-renowned linguist Professor Noam Chomsky, who was in Gaza when the ship was attacked. Director of the Palestinian NGO's network PINGO, Amjad Shawa, was the one in charge of receiving the humanitarian aid from the Estelle activists. He was in direct contact with the Estelle ship until it was intercepted by Israeli forces.
Estelle was carrying quantities of aid, which was aid items, which was prevented by Israel to enter Gaza as construction materials, children toys, and different items which Gaza need for.
According to Estelle's organizers, the most important cargo was solidarity with Palestinians and determination to work for an ending of the Israeli siege.
There was great support to Estelle's mission from different civil society organizations all over the world. That was very important to get Gaza again on the focus. Also, the message of Estelle reached the minds and hearts of the Palestinians, who were in bad need for this action.
The Estelle was also carrying an anchor for the Gaza Ark project, which aims to build a boat by recycling old vessels in Gaza to carry Palestinian goods to the outside world. The Estelle's nearly 5,000 miles long solidarity journey with the besieged Gazans through Europe ended in clear violation of international law and human rights. Ashraf Shannon, reporting for Remember Palestine, Gaza.
Okay, we're joined now via Skype from Stockholm, Sweden, by Dror Fehler, who's the spokesman for the Freedom Flotilla Coalition. Fehler was aboard the Estelle and was detained for several days before later being deported back to Sweden. Mr. Fehler, welcome to Remember Palestine. If I could ask you, first of all, why did you undertake this trip?
You know, this is not the first time. I have been on the Freedom Flotilla 2010. I have been on the Freedom Flotilla 2011. I was on the only boat that succeeded to break the siege already in Athens and came all the way nearly to Gaza, the French boat Dignity. And I was now on the Estelle on our mission to Gaza. I am convinced, together with many other activists all over the world, that the siege of Gaza, the maritime siege of Gaza especially, is abomination. It's illegal, and it should be stopped immediately. We think it should be lifted permanently and totally. We think it's not constructive in any way, even from the point of view of the Israelis. It's not working.
Mr. Fehler, what exactly were you intending to deliver? What was on the ship?
They said in the reportage, we had 41 tons of cement. We had 600 footballs. We have some medicine. We have wheelchairs. We had the most important thing of all, solidarity from the people of Europe to the Palestinian, and a very important message to the Palestinian people in Gaza and in the West Bank that they are not alone, that we will not forget them. We will not turn our eyes from their problems, and we will...
Israel says that when it boarded the boat, it didn't use force while seizing the ship and gave you guys, the activists, food and water. Is that true?
They used force. You know, when you come with about 5 frigates, 2 helicopters with snipers on it, with 20 Zodiac boats, and you attack a civilian boat in international water with 30 activists between the age of 25 and 80, of course it is violent. They came with teasers, they came with weapons, they came with full armed, and they took our boat by force. They break
and into- and how you were subsequently detained? How were you treated in custody?
You know, we were treated. The treatment is a regular treatment in prison. Of course, prison is a very unpleasant thing. Of course, when you are in prison, when you are doing a humanitarian mission, is even more unpleasant. But I must say, they didn't torture us. They didn't beat us. They just deprived of our freedom and broke our mission to deliver this message and this material to Gaza.
I must put to you something that Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, said. He said that you were trying to provoke and slander Israel's name, and he said that Israel was just protecting its borders.
I think that this is a prosperous statement, because I think that the siege in itself is a provocation. I think the wall is a provocation. I think the settlements is a provocation. I think the segregation and apartheid policies that Israel is using against the Palestinian people, this is the provocation. What we were doing is trying to send a message of solidarity. What we were trying to do is to tell the people of the world that this is not a question of ethnicity, this is not a question of nationality, this is not a question of religion. We are together here, Muslim, Christian, Jews, and atheists, on a mission for human rights and international law.
And I must also put to you very briefly something that Ron Prosser, the Israel's UN envoy, said. He wrote a letter calling you basically weekend revolutionaries. He said that you have radical and extremist agendas. He said that the Vikings had a better moral compass than you.
You know, if a terrorist or extremist is to defend international law, human rights, Geneva Convention, then we are extremists, if this is extremism. But I don't think. I think this is the mainstream of international policy, and I think that the Israeli policies is the extreme one. But I must also emphasize that the passivity of the world, the passivity of the European Union, and the passivity and help that Israel is getting from the Western world is part of the problem. Israel would have possibility to implement this, if not for the support they get.
And just to finish very quickly, Mr. Fehler, what do you think you achieved from this trip?
I think we put back the focus on the Gaza and Palestine problem. I think we put the focus on the fact that people should not be silent when injustice is done, even if they live in countries that are far away. I think we put the international solidarity on the map again, and we will continue to do so.
Okay, Dror Fehler, thank you very much for joining us from Stockholm, Sweden. Well, as I said before, the Estelle was intercepted on the high seas by the Israeli Navy, and we can see a short clip now of exactly how it all happened.
Facing the same fate as the predecessors that followed the wake of the Mavi Marmara, 30 international activists on board of a vessel called Estelle were intercepted by the Israeli army. In spite of their attempts to persuade the soldiers to let them continue their trip to the Gazan coast.
We are from many countries, from all over the world. We are traveling, we are sailing like free people. We don't have terrorists, we don't have pirates in our seas.
Back in Greece, Vangelis Pisias, one of the people on board of Estelle, not only criticized the Israeli reaction towards the boat, but also the waste of resources urgently needed in Gaza.
The cost of this operation could have been used to build two schools in that region, but instead they decided to mobilize hundreds of armed commandos to board a ship where there are 30 activists, to tie them and hit them with electroshock and tasers, and finally tow the boat to the port of Ashdod.
Well, I'm pleased to say that we're joined via the internet again from Paris by Greta Berlin, a co-founder of the Free Gaza Movement and a veteran of siege-breaking trips to Gaza. And in the studio, we have independent journalist and documentary maker Hassan Ghani, also a veteran of many siege-breaking trips to Gaza. Greta Berlin, if I could start with you. Now, you've been involved with the Free Gaza Movement since 2007. In that time, have you made any progress?
I started it in 2006, but the first voyage was in 2008. And one of the things I don't think people recognize is that we got in successfully five times. There have been 11 voyages total now. We got in successfully five times in 2008, and we have been violently stopped five out of the last six times since then.
And why do you think, you said you got in successfully at the beginning and then you were intercepted afterwards. Why has Israel decided to stop these flotillas? Give us an insight into their thinking.
Well, I guess you'd have to ask them, but I think we kind of assumed that they ignored us for the first five times because they thought we would go away. They thought at the very beginning that we were a bunch of hippies, that's what they called us, that we didn't amount to anything. And if they ignored us, we would stop. They didn't realize that this was not about one voyage. This was about breaking Israel's illegal siege on Gaza, and that we were going to continue to go until the siege is broken. And it still isn't. It still isn't. We have made now 11 attempts to come in. What we have done is we have kept the siege of Gaza on the front page. And that's one of our primary purposes. It's not to deliver aid. It's to tell the world that Israel has no right to blockade 1.5 million Palestinians.
Okay, Hassan, if I can turn to you now. I mean, one of the things the Israelis claim is that actually there's no aid on these ships. From your perspective as a journalist, you've been on many flotillas. Is there any aid on these ships?
Well, as Greta just mentioned, the primary objective of these flotillas isn't about taking aid through. The idea is to break the siege so that Palestinians can trade with the world, access the international waters, and then through commerce, lift themselves out of the situation they're in. No Palestinian that I've met wants to be dependent on aid. That's not a long-term solution. But most of the boats that I've gone through have carried aid in some form, whether it's symbolic or whether it's tens of thousands of tons of aid, as we saw on the Freedom Flotilla, which had several ships, some of them simply carrying aid only, no activists, just aid, you know, whether it's concrete or whether it's wheelchairs or whether it's toys for children. Mm-hmm. So they do carry aid, but I don't think that's the main point. And when Israel says these boats weren't carrying aid, usually it's actually a lie. In the initial moments after the attack, these boats, they put out press releases and put out the information, try and dominate the agenda. And later on, it emerges that there was some form of aid, but that's not really the point. Whether there is aid or there isn't, the point is that Palestinians have a right to access their own waters, and they have a right to reach international waters and trade with the world.
I mean, these boats have been going since 2008, as Greta corrected me. But I mean, we sit here every 6 months and we talk about these flotillas that get intercepted. It hits the headlines for a few days and then it kind of goes away. I mean, do you see an intrinsic value in continuing these flotillas?
Well, I think it keeps it in the news agenda, because what's happening in Gaza, as I've seen and as you've seen yourself, is a slow collective punishment of the Palestinian people. They're not at the point of starvation, but they're slowly being dragged to that point by the Israelis. And what they're doing in the sea is extending that siege, which is implemented by land, whether it's the Rafah border or whether it's the border with Israel, but they're extending it into the sea where they have no legal right to do so. Mm. So the point of the flotillas is these wave upon wave of boats which keep bringing it back into the headlines, and then they set a precedent like we're seeing next week in Turkey. When the Israelis attacked the Freedom Flotilla, they killed 9 people on board the Mavi Marmara. One of them was a US national as well, we should remember.
Can I actually stop you there, Hassan, just because we're going to talk about that a bit later on. But if I can turn to Greta. Greta, there is a perception now, I think, that restrictions have eased on Gaza. Investment is coming in after the Egyptian revolutions, Egypt's eased entry. Maybe the Israelis have a little bit as well. I mean, what is the situation in Gaza like now? And is it as dire as it was a few years ago?
Yes, it's as dire as it was a few years ago. It's probably worse. There's been a UN report that's come out that Gaza will be uninhabitable by the year 2016. And so there are little band-aids that go on that say, well, we have a little bit more done. I'm a veteran of the civil rights movement in the 60s, and I did want to answer one thing about whether or not this is successful. The Freedom Riders didn't think that, but ultimately, States. We will continue to sail. We will continue to push the boundaries, and we will continue to push Israel until this blockade is gone. So I don't think we see this as an individual voyage. We see this as a strategy. This is a strategy because it's Israel that has the blockade. It's not Egypt. It's not anybody else. It is Israel that is doing this to the Palestinians of Gaza.
And Greta, do you see any signs of hope in terms of the international geopolitical situation? I mean, for example, the US elections, do you think that that's going to have an influence on what happens, whether the siege is broken or not?
It's hard to tell. I think if Obama gets reelected, he's not going to be as beholden to the Zionists in the United States. But I'm not so sure that much is going to change. I think that the Palestinians in Gaza, I think the Palestinians in the occupied territories, have been working on nonviolent resistance for decades. And I think ultimately that is going to succeed. The boycott, divestment, and sanctions, it's going to succeed. It's taking time. It took time in South Africa. It took time in the South in the United States. But I'm an optimist or I wouldn't be doing this. And I think ultimately this blockade is going to go away. I think ultimately Israel is going to pay the price in the international community for what it has done, not only
We're having a few problems with the line, Greta, so I'm actually going to come back to Hassan in the studio for the time being. Hassan, I'm actually interested in your perspective as a journalist. How do you think generally the media has covered this story?
Well, it depends on the media. When I was on the Mavi Marmara, when I came back and saw the way the BBC portrayed what happened, it was as if the situation had been completely reversed. And they'd actually gone to great efforts to avoid looking at the forensic evidence of what happened, the eyewitness testimony, and what the UN report, which went into great detail, said, and instead took interviews with the soldiers, took their word as gospel almost, and gave a small amount of time to the actual victims of the Israeli soldiers and portrayed the Israeli military as victims. So if you look at it from that way, most of the British public will have seen that documentary. Mm. It's quite infamous now. And they will have seen this as a conflict between two equal sides at best, or if they took the BBC's line to heart, then they will have seen the Israeli soldiers as the victims who were trying to enforce a siege which is legitimate and came under attack from these pole-wielding activists.
I remember interviewing you shortly after you were arrested and kind of deported on one of these siege-breaking trips, and you told me that the Israelis were at pains to take away all your footage, the footage that you'd accumulated during the trip, and not just you, but the other journalists as well. I mean, they just want to destroy all the evidence today, or?
Well, there's two points to that. I mean, one is that they're very keen to set the news agenda, which is why they keep activists in prison for at least a couple of days. The last time I was in prison, it was for a week. So that while that news cycle is going on, while that story is in the agenda, they can dominate, they can put their version of events across, and they film as well. When the soldiers come on, they're wearing video cameras, and then they'll select bits of footage that corroborate their version of events. The second thing is, of course, as you mentioned, to eliminate any evidence of what happened on the Mavi Marmara. Two of the people they killed were holding cameras. And if the footage that was filmed on the Mavi Marmara all came out, it would be quite damning for the Israeli military, because it would show how they killed people while there were some of them lying on the floor. There is actually video that exists of that, which did come out because of the
And briefly, Hassan, connection. What about the activists themselves? Did they try and distort the news agenda?
I was never censored at any point when I was covering these bolts. But what they did try and keep under wraps was the logistics of things, the dates, the locations of the bolts, and so on, which is understandable because they want to keep things under wraps to prevent any sabotage and so on. That was the only time when I was censored. Generally, they didn't try and influence what we said.
Okay. And Greta, just coming back to you now, I think we got you back online. Greta, in the future, I mean, are you going to pursue the same strategy of sending these flotillas? Do you have any different plans?
Yes, actually, we do. There will be other strategies, but it'll still involve boats. I'm not involved in the next flotilla design, but I can tell you right now that what they're going to do is to take a boat from Gaza out to the EU. It's called Gaza's Ark, and it's going to be exactly what we've been saying all along, that this has nothing to do with aid. It has to do with trade. So it's not enough to send boats in. We also need to make sure that we help the Palestinians send the boats out. And we can provide the expertise, we can raise the money so that they can buy the boats or that they can fix the boats. And that's going to be the next one in 2013.
Okay, so breaking the siege internally and not just externally. Thank you very much, Greta Berlin, joining us there from Paris, and also to Hassan Ghani here in the studio. Okay, regular Remember Palestine viewers will know that every week we feature a roundup of how pro-Palestinian activists around the world are resisting Israeli oppression. So here's this week's Global Resistance.
Palestinian, Israeli and international activists gathered in Rami Levi, the third largest Israeli retail supermarket chain in occupied West Bank. The activists called for a boycott of settlement goods and an end to the illegal occupation. They were handled aggressively as IDF forces pushed, punched and shoved female demonstrators, whilst throwing stun grenades at arm's length, causing severe injuries to the group. The Russell Tribunal on Palestine, comprised of a group of academics, scientists, cultural and political analysts, meeting in New York for the fourth session of the tribunal. They raised the issue of the biases seen from the United States of America and the United Nations when it comes to Israel breaching international laws. They also added that there is now a situation in which Israel has achieved the status of immunity and impunity facilitated by the US. Breaking the Silence is an organization of veteran combatants who have served in the Israeli military since the start of the Second Intifada, and have taken it upon themselves to expose the Israeli public to the reality of everyday life in the occupied territories. By exposing the inhumane crimes, Breaking the Silence aims to give the voices of soldiers a platform, forcing Israeli society to face the harsh realities of its creation.
Okay, that's it from Remember Palestine for this week. Join us again next week for more stories and discussion about the Palestinian struggle. Bye-bye.